From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of January, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass will be here to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. He's with Agrible and Nutrient Ag Solutions. You may have seen him talk about five systems that are coming through the Midwest, the United States, in fact, over the next several days, actually a couple of weeks. We'll take that up with him and kind of figure out what next week might look like here in the state of Illinois, too. So you want to stay with us for that. And then if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon. Our guest was Dr. Michael Cordonier talking about the situation on the ground in Brazil and how he sees that crop developing and the hurt that has been put on it, both by the drought in the north and the very wet weather early in the season in the south. We hope you can stay with us for that. If not, you can always find it online at willag.org, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend. March corn in Chicago settled at $4.60¾, down 5¾ for this Friday. The May at $4.73¼, 5¾ lower. And December futures down 4¾ at $4.94. March soybeans $12.56¼, down 11¼. The May at $12.64¼, 12¼ lower. And November beans at $12.08½, down 12¼. Bean meal $6.80 lower. The bean oil down 53¢. Wheat futures up 2½ at 6.16 in the March. That for the soft red. The hard red at 6.28, up 2¼¢. Live cattle futures at $170.57½, 55¢ lower. Feeder cattle were down $1.50, and lean hogs were up 95¢ for the day. The crude oil at $73.91 a barrel, up $1.71. Mike Zuzlow at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas is now here. Happy New Year to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Right back at you, Todd, and all the great listeners and podcast people there on the Will Ag Network.
We appreciate that. They're probably not very happy, actually, I would think, especially if they have soybeans that they have yet to market. Oh, corn, too, of course. Those contract lows earlier in the week were not the greatest thing. Tell me about this marketplace.
Well, the big thing, I think, is the one thing that made sense to me this week, Todd, was the idea that with better weather in South America, the soybeans were either too expensive and had a weather premium, or the corn did not. And, you know, I've talked about that, you know, for probably about a month or so. And so something had to give, especially if the wheat market wasn't going to turn around and go higher. And so the fact that we saw about a 43-cent loss in lead month beans, the fact that we got below the October low of 12.50½, that's a new 25-month low we made today on Friday. That made sense to me because of the South American weather. What really didn't make a lot of sense to me until the later part of the trading day on Wednesday, Thursday, was a bigger system of precip, rain and snow, coming into the hard red wheat belt, followed by improved crop conditions for key states like Oklahoma and Kansas. That put the hard red wheat on edge, especially given that the crude oil market actually went lower on what I would consider bullish geopolitical news. So that was the setup this week. It was to try and buy more corn acres at this point for new crop corn by navigating that bean corn ratio lower, and also trying to take out weather premium for the southern plains and the wheat, because we had nothing to hang our hat on from the outside markets.
There was an awful lot of geopolitical news. Which part of it did you see as bullish?
I do. And, you know, this is interesting because I'm working on a new piece of analysis for clients and subscribers that is heavily leaning on some older analysis from, I think it was the World Bank. And they looked at how commodity prices reacted to supply and demand disruptions back before the 90s and after the 90s. And what I try to tie together, or I'm trying to tie together, is we are a lot like the 90s in terms of China is the new Japan. China is the deflationary spiral fear that Japan was back in the 90s. And the trade's very well aware of that, and they're very nervous about that. Again, you and I have talked about this a lot. So that data, though, shows that back when we had inflation and didn't have the great moderation, as they call it, and they didn't have weak interest rates and really strong monetary policy, keeping the equity markets going and the global economy going. Back before the 90s, we saw a big shift where global supply disruptions put premium into the commodity markets. And I think that's where we should be headed, but the trade's not there yet.
So you're comparing Japan's very, very tough economic times at the end of the 90s, if I remember correctly, with what would have in since then been, if we've got a disruption in trade, problematic. But prior to then, and you're saying China may be having difficult times economically, I believe that's what you're getting at. The Red Sea interruption should be should raise the price of commodities, not lower them. Is that what where you're
that's
at?
Okay, that's exactly right. And the difference the trade can't, I think, see through right now because of algorithmic trading and black box modeling is what it was like back then before the 90s. And you're right. I mean, we're talking about a Chinese food CPI year over year that's down negative 4.2%. Their PPI negative 3%. Their PPI has been negative ever since late 2022. And so you could call them the new Japan by certain metrics. And I think the trade has really latched onto that because their consumer in China is just not performing. And the hog prices and the pork prices are a big reason for that.
What's the difference in those two eras before and after or during that last Japanese recession in the 90s? What's the difference between those eras that causes either in what you're hopeful an increase in prices or a depression in prices, as the case may be?
Yeah, two things. The Japanese situation was what they would call a middle income trap. They'd gotten big enough on their exports. They needed to move into bringing in more imports on domestic consumption and tackle their monetary policy and currency issues, which they did not accomplish. China's right there. So that's the one thing where there's similarities to the 90s. But what I think the bigger contrast is central bank policy in the 90s after the 80s inflation. We had the 70s inflation and the 80s inflation. After the 80s inflation, central banks said, we're not going to take inflation anymore, and we've got this dual mandate. We're going to do everything we can to kill inflation. I'm arguing right now that supply side inflation, like the Red Sea, like you just brought up, that's something that, you know, central banks can't control right now. And so you're using the wrong tool or a tool that's going to be ineffective. So that's the battle line. And it's very deep waters that we have to tread to understand for our marketing. But that's the nature of our markets nowadays.
What do you mean by very deep water? And how do you analyze this for the commodity corn and soybean producers that are clients?
Yeah, that you just said it. I mean, what I'm saying is that I need to give a simplified answer after explaining it. Okay, what do I do? If I'm a farmer and rancher, I don't want to know all this economic history. Well, that's where the value levels come in. And I can tell you my 2024 value levels for crude oil and wheat are neck and neck in terms of how undervalued they are. They're at undervalue or below undervalue, given everything that I look at. And that's even before looking at this newer piece of analysis.
Corn and soybeans undervalued as well or not?
Corn can be very undervalued a week from today, Todd. I think that's the other thing that the producers and ranchers need to know out there is that if we're light 10 to 11 million metric tons on corn and light 10 to 11 million metric tons on beans for Brazil production because damage already done, I think that will be reflected much more quickly in the corn because it would join then if we didn't slash demand, it'd join wheat and having an 8, 9, 10 year stocks to use ratio that's 8 to 9, 10 year low in stocks to use ratios. I don't think the trade's really focusing on that at all by being closer to 450 versus 5 or 550.
Those global figures coming out with the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate Friday the 12th, a week from today. Do you think USDA will move that quickly?
I think they should because there's CONAB is ahead of them right now, and there's several private firms, including me, that are saying the damage has already been done. And a lot of the anecdotal news coming out of South America, Center West, Brazil, and even Argentina is not perfect. And they have a big crop in Argentina already built in on from December's report.
Yeah, the CONAB numbers are due out the 10th. The USDA numbers are due out the 12th. And we'll talk to you that afternoon and see how things went. Thank you much.
You bet. Happy New Year again, Todd.
Happy New Year to you as well. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's at globalcommresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. let's turn our attention to the weather now. Eric Snodgrass joins us from the balmy Tucson, Arizona area. I bet it's fantastic there today, right?
You know, it's funny about Tucson. It got pretty chilly last night, but then you just wake up and there's bright blue skies and blazing sun. So by the middle of the day, it's 50 and 60 and it gets quite warm down here. But I'm actually down here presenting at a conference, and boy, there's a lot of folks at this conference that want to know if they'll be able to get home after it's all said and done. So yeah, it's a pretty active go.
Okay. So you're alluding to something that this conference may go for a while, apparently, or maybe they're just worried, because I watched your from Nutrien and Agrible weather forecast yesterday, the video from yesterday morning. You didn't get a lot of sleep that night, by the way. And five systems in what, the next week? Is that right, or something along those lines?
I'd call it the next 15 days, but the Pacific is stacked up and it's ready to go, and there's nothing ahead of it that's going to block it. And so that's what we, you know, if you're a winter weather lover, this is it. Now, let me give you some bigger picture idea here first. The best thing about this is that the systems that are rolling through are going to have just open access to Gulf moisture. So the story here about how dry things have been in our subsurface soil moisture, the problems we're having in the Mississippi River, the dry Mid-South, the dry Midwest, you know, these are the kinds of systems that come through before we get really cold that bring in moisture that we can actually put into the soil. I'm really excited about this for soil health. Now, everybody listening to us right now says, Eric, just tell me how much snow we're going to get. And I'm going to say something to you. We do have a system coming through tomorrow. That one's going to go to our south. We could get some snow showers, a little covering out of that one, kind of in the central Illinois area. That's not the big dog. That's just number one. Number two enters late this weekend into the Pacific Northwest. And I'm not joking to you. The parts of the Cascade Mountains may pick up 5 to 6 feet of snow out of this. That system then sticks to the south, comes out of Texas. And what we want, if you want snow, Todd, is you want it to go to Little Rock, from Little Rock to Memphis, from Memphis to Nashville. If the low follows that track, the snow, heavy snow, will be just north of I-70. If it goes any farther to the north, we have to deal with the fact we start off with rain, which is actually kind of likely next late Monday into Tuesday, and then wait for the transition. So the number one thing to watch this weekend is for people like me, other meteorologists, to see if the storm track shifts to the south, we get big time snow. And you say, well, how much? I'm going to be honest with you. There's enough liquid in this that if we get cold enough, we could be talking about a 6 to 12 inch snowfall event. Big. Now, problem is, if it shifts any farther north, we spend too much time in rain and all the heavy snow is in northern Missouri, northern Illinois, Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan. It is a very hard forecast. And the system that I'm talking about right now isn't even to Alaska yet. So you understand, like, this is still, it's several days out when it gets here. And remember, there's still three more following it. So Todd, I could talk about this for another hour, but the point is there's moisture that's coming in and it's going to be fantastic when we get into the end of this winter and start talking about next spring.
Okay, now I know you're rooting for Nashville. I would like it a little further north, just because I need to go from Mount Vernon to Peoria on Tuesday. And you know, the 10 inches or 6 to 12 inches of snow doesn't bother me. It's the wind, and yeah. I take it there's going to be wind with this one.
Yeah, there is. The second system, this one that we just kind of talked about here, is going to have the best upper-level support. I mean, it's textbook. And what that means is rapid decompression. Now, what does all that mean? Low pressure forms quickly, pressure gradients are large, and as a result, we get a lot of wind out of it. So I think it'll be most windy up the East Coast, but we'll be dealing with the stronger winds here. I'll tell you this, Todd, if you want to have a massive snowstorm today, right now, today and tomorrow, we need to have what we call antecedent cold air. That's cold air before the storm system gets here. And we just don't fully have that enough cold air right now to make this just a slam dunk big snow forecast for us.
It does come in afterwards though, right?
It does. In fact, we're going to spend most of the rest of January with more prolonged cold stretches than we are those warmer days. It'll be volatile because it's January and we live in Illinois, but we've got some pretty cold air that's coming in starting about 7 or 8 days from now. And it's going to be around well past mid-month and even toward the end of the month. So what that cold air will do is guarantee any system following it to be able to give us some snow. And here's the big picture, Todd. We had, what, 9 inches last year? We could get all of that in one system, the second system coming through. So if you can hear a little excitement in my voice, yeah. I mean, I'm a weather nerd. This is kind of fun for me, but be prepared. for some possible pretty rough conditions going forward.
Better for topsoil, subsoil, if it rains as opposed to snows, or the other way around?
Well, to be honest with you, I don't really care about either. It's the moisture that's going to get there, and the reality is that our soil's not frozen yet. So I looked this morning, and our 4-inch soil temperatures, they're not below freezing till you get pretty far to our north right now. So anything we get, if any of it melts, if it's snow, it gets in there. If any of the rain comes, it gets in there. And we need it in a big way. I would love to have you and I talking in April about how winter did its best to correct that subsurface soil moisture problem. And there's better indications that it might.
Yeah, because winter would be a good time to do it. Sometimes, usually might happen about the time we change into spring. We'll have to wait and
Right.
see what happens there. South America, speaking of rainfall and weather that impacts a set of crops directly, what's happening there this week?
Well, we got to go north to south. And in the north, big states like Mato Grosso and Goiás, these big producing areas in the north, you go back and look at the historical precipitation data and look at October, November, December all combined. The last time it was this dry was 1942, which means you have no farmers, at least I wouldn't imagine, that right now have a memory of this dryness, okay? Unless someone's out there still kicking it after farming during World War II, then no one's going to have a memory of this dryness. Now, here's the thing. It just started raining, and they're expected to have an 80% chance over the next 10 days in those same very dry areas of picking up 4 inches of rain. That's a lot of rain. Now, in 10 days, is that going to correct all of the problems? No. If the rain, here's the scenario, if the rain continues through the end of January, which we're not currently forecasting to, but if it did and the models are wrong, that's actually a bigger problem because the crop has been stressed with heat and drought. Now, all of a sudden, we're going to be putting a bunch of rain on it right when they're getting ready to start harvesting it. And that's going to make harvest conditions very difficult. So, to be honest, Todd, I would tell you that the bigger concern going forward in northern Brazil is too much rain after drought, meaning that the crop won't be able to come out on time. Now, is that going to happen? What's the chances of it happening? It's not, I'm not overly confident, but it could be a problem we'll be looking at. Real quick, southern Brazil is in much better shape, and Argentina is likely going to double up on what they did a year ago, which the crop was cut in half a year ago by drought. So there's a lot of positivity in Argentina right now.
As we wrap up, can I bring you back to the United States?
Sure.
Any long-term kinds of things we can discuss today?
Well, we just had new long-range data released this morning. And what it looks like, honestly, is that spring might be one of my most favorite phrase for spring, right? Tighter windows again. We see right now wetter conditions as this El Nino, which has peaked, begins to fade, and some of the longer-term indications suggest a wetter spring. I like it overall for water health. I mean, Todd, I made a map the other day. There are parts of Iowa right now that in the last 4 years are more than 40 inches cumulatively in deficit on moisture. So to see these wet conditions come in, we kind of got to take the good with the bad. We need the moisture. We don't want the tight windows. But El Nino will likely be gone by the time we get into summer. And that typically means for us, years that follow El Niños, okay, we tend to get a lot of ridge riding thunderstorms in summer. It's the south that typically bakes. So a lot of things moving, a lot of pieces on the chessboard moving, some falling over, but that's why we talk every Friday to kind of keep an idea on where those things are going to start to change going forward.
Indeed, it is. Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions, and Agrible joined us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world online at willag.org, where you can still sign up and register at least for the next few hours through early Friday evening for next week's Illinois Farm Economic Summits. We'll close registration as we go into the weekend. Walk-ins are welcome, of course. You can still find the details there at willag.org for our meetings in Mount Vernon, along with East Peoria and in DeKalb. If you'd like to register, you can still do that for a few more hours for the Illinois Farm Economic Series. The Agricultural Economist and I will be on the road through some of that snowstorm early in the week on Tuesday, Mount Vernon on Wednesday in Peoria, and Thursday we'll be in DeKalb.